foundation for the idea of what kind of challenges are we going to address. Philip had a great list of those in his second lesson, talking about doubt. How do you deal with doubt? I would say this morning we're actually going to jump in and begin to look at some of the challenges in the category, the next two, of theology. The questions about religion. Is religion a good thing or a bad thing? For those of us in this group here this morning, probably most of us say, immediately, of course it's a good thing. But you hear words like it's toxic, it's corrosive, it's got all kinds of damaging things to culture. Well, that's a challenge. And so we're going to look at some of the issues that come up related to that. And then Philip will address personal accountability in regard to theology. We'll come back. I don't have lesson five yet. I have two really good books that I'm trying to use as in preparing that material, both of which I have read, both of which I've lost. I don't know who I loaned them to. Amazon has managed to replace one, but the other one got delayed. So I really want to dig back through, and I'll have you a lesson sheet on Wednesday for next Sunday. But there are four lessons out there, and you should be able to kind of get through those four lessons.
What's the name of it?
I can't tell you that right now, Chester. Later on, we'll talk about those books. I'll even show you what they are when we get to that class. Okay? Any questions about where we are and where we're going? All right, let's do it. Let's jump in. I did want to say one more thing. Here are the goals of the class. I'm not going to go through the detail part, but I've tried to hand out the goals to you. But this is the part I want you to remember. Look at the bubble things to the right. Very simply. This is what this class ought to accomplish even this morning. You need to expect to be different. By the time we finish this study or along the way, commit yourself more to be different where God is calling on you to be different. No, there's no value in being different for the sake of being different. But if the scriptures say this is the truth or this is the way you should do something, and the world says, no, that doesn't make any sense, you need to be ready to be different. We want to learn something useful. I hope that there's some instruction here in the class along the way. And if I get confusing to you, you need to stop the class and say, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to do the best. Some of this stuff is pretty dense. At the same time, I want to be able to communicate it in as organized and as clear a way as possible. I'm going to struggle with that sometimes. We want to learn something useful so that it will establish a conviction. I know this is true. I understand what stands behind it. There's sound reason for believing this. And when you establish that conviction, we need to be willing to act on it. And as we said before, in this class in particular, be able to influence our children, our grandchildren, others around us maybe that are struggling with things that we're not struggling with. Okay, those are the goals. Now, let's jump in. Tell me, what do you think? What are some negative comments that are frequently made about Christianity? Or sometimes you'll hear Judeo-Christian values or the Judeo-Christian culture. There are issues with that. There's some problems with that. What are some negative ideas and thoughts? It looked like you were about to raise your hand already. So fire off.
Judgmental. So judgmental.
All right. So you're just too judgmental in this. Narrow-minded kind of thinking.
Guilt-based.
Yep.
Guilt-based.
Ah, I like that. So what it does is it establishes, it makes you feel bad about yourself, and so it's a guilt-based kind of approach to things. Blaine, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, based on hypocrisy.
Okay. So, on the one hand, maybe it's got some good teaching, but you people don't really live it the right way. And so that's a big issue. It's good. Clint?
So, sometimes painted is for those with a low IQ or simple-minded.
Write that one down, Philip. I don't have that one on my list. To believe this stuff, you've got to be just very easily persuaded, not very intelligent, very gullible. I couldn't think of the word. Was that you, Catherine? No,
it's intolerant.
It's intolerant, somebody said? Okay, yeah, same kind of idea. Narrow-minded thinking, judgmental, you're not very tolerant of other ideas, you know?
Exclusivity.
Okay, so that's kind of fitting into that same idea. You think that you're the only one, that Christianity is the only path, perhaps? We're going to talk about whether that it claims that or not. important things established, Wayne?
That there have been lots of evil and wars, conflicts.
Okay,
in the name
we're good.
Of Christianity over the years, etc.
Yeah, all these bad wars, all this atrocities and things done in the name of Christ. Okay? What else?
Male dominated.
All right, so it's sexist, right? I mean, it's a religion really meant for men. Keep going. These are good. I'm going to put a summary up of some of these. I won't have every one, but a number of them will have. What else?
That doesn't align with science.
It's anti-science, right? Have you heard that? It's like you kind of got to make a decision between religion or Christianity and all, or science. You can't have it both ways. So you get a little bit of that conflict at times too.
Good feeling. Overly politicized.
Okay. Yeah, so you're kind of aligning with one group or another in regard to that. Yeah, that's a little more subtle one. I don't quite have up on the list, but that's a good one too. What else? Any more? Wayne, one more.
And speaking to someone who shared the Islamic faith, they said, hey, you know, you guys don't have one Bible. You'll kind of agree on, you know.
So there's all these differences, right? And think about this too. Think about all the fighting and things that's gone on over a time period of history within Christianity about who's right, who's not, and all. Yeah, so you get that kind of conflict. All right, Cedric, you got your hand up. I'm going to get one more. Well, I'll thank you.
I've heard the thing about preachers don't have any fun. They can't have any fun. So regimented, you know. So
well, we use you as our example. But yeah, that is it sometimes. It's like this suppression of things. It's, you know, it's back to that guilt part, right? You're not meant to be happy or to what. It's got a kind of a corrosive value standing behind it. It could have something to do with being bigoted or racism. I'm going to put a couple of thoughts up here as well. All right, so these are some of the things. By the way, I should have said this before. In that area of theology, my class here is about the origins of Judeo-Christian religion. I think that's what it was called. And Philip knows, I'm late to this topic. I mean, Philip and Eric and Marty helped put together the original 26-part lesson, and Philip and Eric taught the high school class, and it kind of like brought me in late in the game. And I'm like, what is this lesson supposed to be about? And, you know, I got Eric's handout, and I looked at it. It's got some quotes from some authors that I know, but I don't know what direction. I didn't go to his class. I really can't tell from his handout where he went with it. I know, given it was Eric, it was a good class, but I really don't know what he did with it. But what we want to do in this class is try to address a couple of things. One are all these comments that our youth hear, that you hear, that really are strong negative comments made about Christianity or religion in general, but especially Christianity or Judeo-Christian values or Judeo-Christian religion. I'll put a few of those summaries back up there again. The other part that we talked about, besides addressing some of those, is this notion that somehow there's nothing special about Christianity. You know, you got all the other religions in the world, and Philip talked about that some. I mean, sometimes the thought is, I got to try everything to determine if anything is really true. But is there something unique and special about Christianity, about the way it started, about that early time period? And I want that thought to stay in your mind, because I think we can show that it is distinctive. I mean, dramatically distinctive from other religions and from other ways of life, in a way that ought to appeal to somebody and make us actually look at it very carefully. All right, so that's kind of where we're headed with this. But here's some of your... I just want to put up some of the kinds of things that you mentioned. We'll take them in two groups of four, because here's what I want you to think through on all these negative thoughts as we've been going through them. What stands out to me about this is the degree to which the criticism is either true or confusing or completely false. Right? So here's an example of that. The idea that it's sexist, right? is there any element of truth about it? Is there anything somebody could pull up and say, you believe this, and I think that that is sexist? What could they do? What could they quote? What could they say?
Well, anything that identifies specific roles for men and women.
Exactly. So I pull up the writings of Paul. You believe in the writings of Paul. It says here that only, you know, in assembly, only the male should speak. Right? Sexist. Period. So there's an element of truth to it, but I'd say it's still confusing. Because at the end of the day, I think I can show Christianity really isn't. It's the first religion that brings grandeur and respect and honor to women on an equal basis to men. You think about Galatians 3 and the end of that. But nevertheless, a little bit of truth in that. And then Christianity was used to justify imperialism. You know this. The Spanish went out to conquer the world, they did it in the name of Christianity. It's their justification for what they did to a lot of other races and places in part. And they brought along their missionaries and all to teach at the same time. It helped justify what they were doing. Now, that's the truth. I mean, that's what happened. Now, what did that say about Christianity or not? But I'm telling you, historically, I can go back through British, English, you know, it was used to justify imperialism. And then there's the idea that it endorses slavery, and therefore it's a racist religion. Here's one where I have to say, look, this is a full of confusion. Does the scriptures address slavery? Yes, so you got to deal with us. What did it say? What did it really mean? And all. But the idea that it endorsed it, that it favored racism, when it's the religion, we're going to look at it, that what made it unique in the first century was that for the first time, here was a religion not tied to a nation or a group of people, but was meant to be open to everybody. It's the exact opposite of that. But there is something in it, you know, that sounds kind of true. Wars in the name of Christ, no doubt. That happens. Wayne's dead on correct about it. And then you got another group of these. The idea that it's anti-science, I would tell you, that's totally false. There is no science if there was not the Christian religion to begin with. A lot of people don't understand that fact. Internal fighting, though? True? Christians fought against each other. And I'm not talking about just debates. I'm talking about the 30-year war between the Lutherans and the Catholics and people in Germany dying right and left. And, you know, your city one day is safe and the next day it's not because you were on the wrong side. No question. Church-sponsored persecution? That happened? Ever heard of the Inquisition? You ever heard of you know, I can go on and on in these. How about narrow-minded, arrogant thinking? Are there Christians who think that way? Sure. That's one of those, sometimes not. The hypocrisy. Yeah, but is that the whole story? All right. Here's the question, though, at the end of the day. Does Christianity indeed claim to be the one and only religion? The only way to God? Because we have this exclusivity accusation. Does it do that? Yes. Okay? John 14, verse 6. You know, it's the statement of Christ about being the way, the truth, and the life. There is a claim to exclusivity, and we need to kind of deal with that as we go forward. All right, here's the other question. What arguments are made to dismiss or deny the unique or special nature of Christianity? That's the second part. Besides trying to address some of those first ones, I do want to be able to present to you how special Christianity is. All right? So, on this question here, what are some things you think that are made to kind of dismiss? You may not know these. Sometimes these are a little more subtle, but people run into them. What we deny or say, it's not all that special. You think of some things? Yeah, Sam.
Well, just the very act of putting together a comparison and say Judeo-Christian okay. versus this versus this versus this. Somehow it puts them all in a parity that you think.
Can you find similarities across a number of major religions in some aspects? Yeah, you can. And we'll
prayer.
Talk about that. Prayer, right, yeah. Can you? Is the golden rule like Jesus' first person ever thought of that? just uniquely came out of the mouth of Jesus. No, there's elements of that all over, so that's one. What else might speak to the fact it's not so special?
We're thinking from the American point of view.
Okay, so that sometimes does cause that to happen if somebody wants to kind of pull in some aspects of that. I'm thinking more broadly than that, but I could see how that would make it even more difficult to kind of address some of that.
The early Jewish culture stole other traditions of other religions.
Yeah.
Like Gilgamesh, for example, is took that, and that's how Noah became. So Genesis, for example, is just other cultures' traditions that were
right. So sometimes you have similar creation-type stories, which is interesting because you could turn that both ways, right? You could say, well, it sounds like there's some element of truth in that because everybody seems to believe in it. But did that then mean that there's nothing special or unique about the other? Mm. Anything else? All right, let me just mention a couple of kind of steps. One, you talked about the idea of morality, that there's nothing special about the morality that Christianity teaches. I want to challenge that, by the way. And we're touching on big, broad topics here and all. I think there is something very special about the morality that's taught in the New Testament. In particular, you take the Sermon on the Mount and compare it to some other things, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I can't deny that there are a lot of good teachings and good morality in other religions, so that may at first seem like nothing special here. One of the things that we were told has come up a lot recently is the idea of other resurrection myths. You know, you can go back through Greek mythology and some other things, and you can find stories about a God who dies but then is resurrected. Does that sound familiar with the story of Christ? And so the idea somehow is like that just all kind of gets linked together back in that murky time period of the first and second century. And it's just like this is some kind of myth story that gets told, and therefore there was nothing special about it, and maybe that even explains how people came to believe it. Look, one of the problems that we have in addressing these questions, and one of the problems that people have who struggle with a lot of these modern challenges, is they don't know the history of the first and second century. They don't understand what the ancient world was really like and how much information is out there to tell us what that world was like. It's not some murky place. We know a lot about how people thought in those days, and we'll be able to address something special about this resurrection. And then finally, there's this idea that somehow or another Christianity kind of replaced Judaism. And therefore, because it replaced Judaism, and would you agree that it did? Okay. Well, we would, in this room, we would say that it's the natural follower of Judaism. Well, then, why can't other religions then replace Christianity? We lost a young lady here to Mormonism once. And this was the struggle that she had. So it forced me to think back through a number of things. Her question was, why wouldn't Mormonism naturally replace the New Testament, you know, the Book of Mormon, because after all, we argue the New Testament replaced the Old Testament, you know, New Covenant to the Old. You know, why isn't this natural? And by the way, it's exactly what the Muslims argue, is that, yes, there's some truth to Jesus, and he wasn't really Son of God, but there is some truth, and so you have this natural progression from Abraham and Moses to Jesus, and then to Muhammad. And that all kind of seems like, oh, okay. So what it's saying is nothing special about Christianity. It has time and place and history. But then, like everything else, it just needs to be replaced. What are we in the modern day believing these kinds of things? So you see where some of the challenges are coming. All right, let's start to try to address some of these. I want you to help me for a minute. What does make it unique? What are some things that make it different? Now, I'm going to switch a definition here. I don't know if you've been noticing this. We're talking about Christianity and Judeo-Christian. And if you haven't picked up on it, I've kind of used those in very broad ways, haven't I? Like, I let Wayne over here, I think it was Wayne, tell me that in the name of Christianity or in Christ, all these wars have been fought. Right?
Wayne.
Yeah.
But I let him get away with that. Because it's true depending on how you define Christianity. I want us to stop for a moment. We are together as a church here with a focus on following the New Testament and what Christ has taught us through His apostles in the New Testament. We talk sometimes about New Testament Christianity. Well, this is important. To think for a moment, so I want you to answer this question. What is different, what is unique about Christianity based on just the New Testament? Just the writings of those New Testament versus all other religions. The reason why this is so important is, first of all, it's going to help to address a lot of those criticisms that we first put up there. And I don't think sometimes that our young people and all draw that distinction. They need to draw that distinction. That's why we appeal to people, forget about denominationalism and all these other things. Look at what God's Word says. And by the way, it's not about what the Church of Christ says. That's just a terrible notion. There is no institution out there, no entity known as the Church of Christ that promulgates different pronouncements about things that ought to be believed. That's not what the Church is. The Church is just a group of people who believe in Christ, who've committed themselves to one another and to the Lord, to do what God asked them to do and to work together in doing. That's all that a church is, the way the New Testament presents. Too many words from Russ. But do you see the value of this? Because now I do not have to justify and explain why the Catholic Church persecuted people who did not believe the same way that they did. All those atrocities, all those kinds of things that happen, I do not have to justify it. I can simply look and say, that's terrible, it's wrong. And it is completely opposed to the morality taught in the New Testament. So what makes it different? Help me out here. Yeah, thank you, Dan. Sorry. You were ready to answer, and then I rushed to keep talking.
I was going to say, we're not...
There's an expectation of good things, but it is not based on, you've got to work your way up to some new level and all that. Right? It reminded me, I was thinking, where's my comment about social practices? And all? I wanted you all to see this. I want your comments in particular about these differences to relate to some of the moral teaching. But there's a social practice in which the religion then begins to take control of society in its entirety and tell people what they must do. There's something special, and I'm going to show you this from the first century on. There's something special about what Christianity did in the first century that was unique. No other religion had been like this ever in the ancient world. And we'll see that. It has to do with some of the social practice. We're citizens of another kingdom,
exactly.
Is the way that it's
put. Exactly.
Yeah, so that's a difference. Again, it's kind of a social thing. There's an expectation. There's a tie-in between government and religion. That's why Sharia law is law that's meant, from a religious standpoint, to be also the law of the land as well. It's a difference. What else? Something else I want to say a minute about Islam.
I was going to say, Russ, maybe this is not what you're looking for, but Christianity has a foundation of miraculous events that were witnessed by eyewitnesses. If you think about all these other religions, it often surprises me. There's really even no attempt to show an interaction of the supernatural with the natural. Christianity has that in a broad base from a lot of eyewitnesses. And that's one of the foundational reasons, I believe, is the evidence you see in the New Testament.
Very good. And those miraculous things are tied to specific time periods written by people who were living among it. It's not like something that... there's a contrast even to the text that bring out those stories if you dug deeper.
Yeah. Relative to age, it's very well documented back to its beginning 2,000 years ago. But it also documents history back beyond that.
Okay.
It actually explains origins. It goes all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah, so again, here's the interesting part. Judeo-Christian, how old is it? Thousands and thousands, not just 2,000, even more. And so then it becomes one of the... I mean, 2,000 years is a pretty old religion, but this is even more than that if you put the two together. But you're going to have to connect them. We'll talk about that.
Anything else? I think for a moment about the writings in the text. I want to make a comment about that before we kind of move on. Tom, that's correct. And you know, Islam says Christianity is not true. Jesus is a good guy, but he's not the Son of God. So that takes out the entire New Testament. The New Testament says Old Testament is true, sacred, they're holy writings breathed out by God. So there's a difference in that viewpoint. I'm going to come back to that in lesson five. That's a little bit off when I meant by text, but I see that word is like, how many copies, manuscript copies do we have? That's a really important point that helps to establish that what we have is what we should have. But I'm going to bring up those issues in lesson five. Here's the point I kind of want to make. The core beliefs and writings of the second largest religion in the world, Islam. Who wrote it? Who wrote the core thoughts and beliefs? Or Muhammad. Actually, he didn't write it. He wasn't literate. He spoke it. It was written down. But the idea is that everything that's there is from him. Same thing is true, by the way, of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It all goes back to what Joseph Smith said had been written. That's one person testifying. Here's the unique part about the Judeo-Christian religion. There's more than 40 writers of the Old and New Testament. And I had this exercise in evidence class. I used to bring in like a box of books from my library. Rachel laughs. She knows all these books and stuff. I'd bring in a poetry book that I have. I'd bring in some history books. I'd bring in a biography or two. I'd bring in a philosophy book. And I'd pull all these out and I'd say, you know, here's like 12 books to the class. Could you think you could find one theme that would run across all these? What if you had like 66 books that you had to do this with and 40 different authors over 2,000 years and all? That's one way of presenting this. But here's a thought that occurred to me only in the last couple of years. Think about what the writers say about each other. They don't say, well, you know, Isaiah talked about, but we have learned things better in our day. And so here in the time period of John and Mark, we're saying that Isaiah, he had some good ideas, but really, you know, this is the... No, that doesn't happen a single time. In all 66 books, there's not one writer who points out to the other writers and say, they were good, but they weren't really inspired, they didn't really have the knowledge. Do you realize how profound that is? That there are that many writers in this and they all agree that we're on the same side and we have the same story and there's a consistency here. Now, I get it. People will say one of the weaknesses is that, you know, you got some differences and discrepancies. Okay, put them on a table. Let's talk about them. Right? I'm willing to do that. But the reality is they're not pointing fingers at each other. And that's a big deal. And it is a huge difference from Islam and some of the other religions. Now, here's we're transitioning. We've got to kind of run fast because I really do want you to see a lot of this. One of the things that stands out that makes Christianity unique, and I'm talking about New Testament Christianity, okay? Not the big religion part, but about trying to look at what Christ and the apostles taught. You can read in your New Testament. What makes this religion unique? One thing is that is this transition from Judaism to Christianity. What an event. And yet, it was predicted. It was expected. Here's two quick places that I'm sorry, I feel like I'm Bill. How he squeezes all that stuff in. I'm sorry, but I'll tell you where these are. You can write them down if you can't quite read them. This is Jeremiah chapter 31. And Jeremiah says, the day is going to come when there will be a new covenant, and it will replace the old covenant. See, the Old Testament is saying, this isn't it. This part of the story, Judaism, based on its text, said there's a limited time period. I wrote a couple of things highlighted at the top of this. You have to read the whole thing. But the prediction was that God was going to make a new covenant, not like the covenant before. And of course, when you pick up your New Testament, you look over at Hebrews chapter 8, you see the same thing quoted. And what it's saying is that this happened. Sure enough, it happened. And it quotes this, but down at the bottom it adds some other things that make it clear that it is a true replacement. We're not trying to keep both of them. That's important too, because somebody will say, here's the contradiction. You're told to eat this way here, and you're told not to eat that way over there. What is the difference? There's a one covenant got replaced by another covenant. And it made the first one obsolete. Incredibly important. Here, by the way, is the point I try to get across to this young lady about Mormonism. I'm open to the idea that the Book of Mormon could have replaced the New Testament if the New Testament had said one day we're going to be replaced. This covenant is going to be replaced. There's nothing in the New Testament that says that. By the way, there's not a single indication in any of the New Testament writers, the apostles, that they expected somebody else later would pick up their role and continue to give new revelation out there. You had a question, Jason?
Well, no, I just wanted to say, plus Joseph Smith was a shady snake.
That's right.
I know.
And you'll start me down a path. I won't get off of it. I completely agree with that. And again, if you would just read history, you would figure that out. And you know what the Mormon answer to that is? In the first part of the Book of Mormon, it says, read this and pray about it, and God will tell you whether it's true or not. And they will not deal with the questions we're trying to in an honest way here. Pull them up, deal with them, look at the evidence. It's different. But here's another one that's not known as well. It's Deuteronomy chapter 30. I love this. Deuteronomy chapter 30 looks like it's just kind of a prediction that one day the Israelites will do some bad things and then they'll be taken into captivity and they'll come back. I know y'all can't read all this. Right? But actually, Deuteronomy 30 is predicting this new covenant that's coming. And you can see that because there's a couple of things here. God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring. It's the New Testament that tells us how God circumcised the heart. It's about the Spirit, being Spirit-led people. It's different than whatever was in the Old Testament. The Lord will again, so this is something new. That's the reason I highlighted that. But here's the main thing, is that in this this prediction, it says, you should not be saying, who will ascend to heaven for us and bring this down that we may hear it and do it? Any of that sound familiar, this idea? Who's going to go up and get this and bring it back? That's what Paul quotes. In Romans 10, Paul is quoting Deuteronomy 30. And he's saying, here's the new covenant. Here's the new time in all, in which the righteousness based on faith, it's not a work-based thing, by the way, it's been pointed out, it doesn't say in your heart, who's going to ascend to heaven, that is to bring Christ down, or who will descend into the abyss to bring Christ up from the dead. We don't need that. God's taking care of that in this new covenant. But the main thing I want you to notice is it goes on to say that what God was predicting in the new covenant was that everybody gets to be part of it. Every nation, every culture, every race. That's what makes Christianity unique. You got it's changed from Judaism to Christianity, but it's based on the idea that now God's message goes out to everybody. Here is a really interesting book. If I quote a book, I'll try to bring it to class. You can thumb through some of it later. The Christians as the Romans saw them. I told you we know a lot about the first century and the ancient world and all. This is a gift from Nate Crickmore. You want to know the resident expert here at Embry Hills on ancient culture and Romans? It's Nate Crickmore. The guy's brilliant, knows all this stuff. And he gave me this book, and I appreciate it because what the author was trying to do was to look at the way the Romans saw Christianity. And I have some other quotes I'm not going to put up there, but are interesting. At the very beginning, he said, I started this book and I was overwhelmed by how different Christianity was than anything that had ever come before. But I want you to notice a couple of things about this transition from Judaism, if I can kind of work through it. So it's a little bit dense. Raise your hand if it doesn't make sense to you. What he does is he goes and he finds the skeptics of the first and second centuries, third century. People who looked at Christianity and said, I don't get this new religion here. Celsus was one of those guys. And Celsus, this is a quote from the book. He knew that the truth of the Christian teaching depended on Christianity's relationship to Judaism, because Christians claim to be the rightful inheritors of the Jewish tradition. Well, that's important. It's saying that these questions about Judeo-Christian, the connection and all, they talked about this early on. They knew that was a question. And people challenged them about how the two things link together and all. Justin Martyr, who was a pagan who'd been raised among the Jews, he said that he was converted to Christianity by reading the prophetic writings of the Jews. That's an interesting thing. Here's a man that we know from the second century who was converted to Christ because he read the Old Testament prophecies about him. How do we sometimes convert people today? We show them this connection between them. That's what they did back then. There's nothing unique about this. We act sometimes like these people were just, you know, they were so gullible. And here was a skeptic who got converted, Justin Martyr, because he was a pagan, he wasn't a Jew, but he read those Jewish writings and he became a Christian. And so Celsus is attacking some of this in his attack. He has like a Jewish spokesperson complaining to Christians. Why did y'all believe this Jesus guy? Why didn't you go off into it? That was the common kind of way of thinking. But more than that, this is the part I want you to really focus on. This writer goes on to say, and he proves this over and over, by how the Romans saw the Christian religion. He said there's another dimension to this exchange between Celsus and the Christians as they're debating out some of these issues and all. It's not simply a debate between paganism and Christianity. Which one's true? Pagan religion or Christianity? There's more to it than that. Here's something else you can learn about this. He says that it's a debate about the new concept of religion. What made it different? Celsus sensed that Christians had severed the traditional bond between religion and a nation or people. The ancients took it for granted that religion was indissolubly linked to a particular city or people. You can find that over and over and over again. Every city had its god, every group of people had their gods and their place. And the idea that somehow or another that you could disassociate the place from the God and let that God and that religion go to other places had never been done before. That's what he's saying. Indeed, there was no term for religion even in the sense that we now use it to refer to the beliefs and practices of a specific group of people or of a voluntary organization divorced from ethnic or national identity. I'm missing good slides. Look around. Where are we all from? What do we all look like? Are we all one nation, one group of people here, associated with this one religion? Of course not. Because that's not what Christianity is about. It's an appeal to everybody, everywhere, to make their own decision. The idea of association of people bound together by religious allegiance with its own traditions and beliefs, its own history, its own way of life, independent of a particular city or nation, foreign to the ancient. And Celsus opposed that because he saw in Christianity a privatizing of religion, in which each one of us makes our own decision about what we're going to do or not do. Now, by the way, the fact that you make your own decision, I make my own decision, does not mean that my truth is the same as your truth. You see the difference in that? There can be truth, one truth, standing out there. But what Christianity says is, you are personally accountable, coming up in the next lesson, to make and decide this. And that was not the way it was in the ancient world. And so it changed everything. All right, so I'm going to blow through something very quickly. And I'm sorry. I wanted you to see some more of this. You know. The resurrection is a piece of evidence. But it's more than that, too. It's the explanation for what you can read in the first century actually happened. If we could just get young people to be able to have the right viewpoint and understanding of the resurrection, it would change everything about their questions and their doubts. But I think there's a lot about the resurrection that a lot of us, I know for myself, only in the last 8 or 9 years to really begin to understand as clearly as maybe I should have 20 or 30 years ago. Here's one thing. It was immediately taught by the first Christians. As soon as there was something called Christianity, it wasn't even called Christianity, but as soon as there was a message about Christ, from the beginning to get-go, it said there was a bodily resurrection of Christ. I cannot stress how important understanding that is. Because you, once you know that that is true, you have to explain it. You can be a skeptic, but you have to explain. Why did they, as soon as he died, start saying he was raised from the dead? Now, for a long time, the idea was, oh, they didn't do that. They waited till way later, you know, kind of the myth began to build and all. But think about it for a moment. And now they've had to backtrack from that. I wrote down four passages because those four passages were written with no question in the mid-first century. Skeptics aren't questioning that. People don't doubt that. Paul wrote in the mid-first century. And he said, there's a group of people out there going around saying Jesus was bodily raised from the dead. You get it? From the beginning. You got to explain it. It also convinced them that Jesus was God. I've tried to say, I guess if I've repeated myself and you know got on a topic I can't seem to get off of, to me it's this one. I'm just so amazed by this. Why did I see this before? You know, all through the New Testament, it talks about the Lord Jesus. You should have read that as a Jew and said, how dare you call him the Lord Jesus? The word Lord that they used was Kyrios. In the Greek Old Testament copies that they had, that was the word for Jehovah, for Yahweh. That's the word they inserted for him. And all through the Old Testament, when it insists there's one God, that same language is turned around in the New Testament and applied to Jesus. If you don't do anything else, go read Deuteronomy 6:4, which says, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one. And then go read 1 Corinthians 8, verse 6, where it applies the first half of that to God the Father and the second half of that to Jesus. Now, you can't do that. And people might go, whoa, wait a minute, what are you saying? But here's the key. As I told you before, these writings, 1 Corinthians, Philippians, Romans, all those, they were written in the mid-first century. They believed this from the beginning that Jesus was God. They had to change their whole the viewpoint of who God was, the idea that there's a Father and a Son, and later we'll talk about the Spirit. But do you get it? Do you see how dramatic this is, this kind of a change? All right. I'll let you off the hook now.